Chapter 7. The Matter of Brian. Something that called itself Tiffany flew across the treetops. It thought it was Tiffany. It could remember everything, nearly everything, about being Tiffany. It looked like Tiffany. It even thought like Tiffany, more or less. It had everything it needed to be Tiffany. Except Tiffany. Except the tiny part of her that was her. It peered from her own eyes, tried to hear with her own ears, think with her own brain. A hiver took over its victim not by force exactly, but simply by moving into any space, like the hermit elephant. The hermit elephant of Hawanderland has a very thin hide, except on its head, and young ones will often move into a small mud hut while the owners are out. It is far too shy to harm anyone, but most people quit their huts pretty soon after an elephant moves in. For one thing, it lifts the hut off the ground and carries it away on its back across the veldt, settling it down over any patch of nice grass that it finds. This makes housework very unpredictable. Nevertheless, an entire village of hermit elephants moving across the plains is one of the finest sights on the continent. It just took you over, because that was what it did, until it was in all the places and there was no room left. Except it was having trouble. It had flowed through her like a dark tide, but there was a place, tight and sealed, that was still closed. If it had had the brains of a tree, it would have been puzzled. If it had had the brains of a human, it would have been frightened. Tiffany brought the broomstick in low over the trees and landed it neatly in Mrs. Earwig's garden. There really was nothing to it, she decided. You just had to want it to fly. Then she was sick again, or at least tried to be, but since she'd thrown up twice in the air, there wasn't much left to be sick with. It was ridiculous. She wasn't frightened of flying any more, but her stupid stomach was. She wiped her mouth carefully and looked around. She'd landed on a lawn. She'd heard of them, but had never seen a real one before. There was grass all around Miss Level's cottage, but that was just, well, the grass of the clearing. Every other garden she'd seen was used for growing vegetables, with perhaps just a little space for flowers if the wife had gotten tough about it. A lawn meant you were posh enough to afford to give up valuable potato space. This lawn had stripes. Tiffany turned to the stick and said, "Stay," and then marched across the lawn to the house. It was a lot grander than Miss Level's cottage, but from what Tiffany had heard, Mrs. Earwig was a more senior witch. She'd also married a wizard, although he didn't do any wizarding these days. It was a funny thing, Miss Level said, but you didn't often meet a poor wizard. She knocked at the door and waited. There was a curse net hanging in the porch. You'd have thought that a witch wouldn't need such a thing, but Tiffany supposed they used them as decoration. There was also a broomstick leaning against the wall, and a five-pointed silver star on the door. Mrs. Earwig advertised. Tiffany knocked on the door again, much harder. It was instantly opened by a tall, thin woman, all in black. But it was a very decorative, rich, deep black, all lacy and ruffled, and set off with more silver jewellery than Tiffany imagined could exist. She didn't just have rings on her fingers. Some fingers had sort of silver finger gloves, designed to look like claws. She gleamed like the night sky. And she was wearing her pointy hat, which Miss Level never did at home. It was taller than any hat that Tiffany had ever seen. It had stars on it, and silver hatpins glittered. All of this should have added up to something pretty impressive. It didn't. Partly it was because there was just too much of everything. But mostly it was because of Mrs. Earwig. She had a long, sharp face and looked very much as though she was about to complain about the cat from next door whittling on her lawn. And she looked like that all the time. Before she spoke, she very pointedly looked at the door to see if the heavy knocking had made a mark. "Well," she said haughtily, or what she probably thought was haughtily. It sounded a bit strangled. "Bless all in this house," said Tiffany. "What? Oh, yes, favourable runes shine on this our meeting," said Mrs. Earwig hurriedly. "Well?" "I've come to see Anagramma," said Tiffany. There really was too much silver. "Oh, are you one of her girls?" said Mrs. Earwig. "Not exactly," said Tiffany. "I work with Miss Level." "Oh, her," said Mrs. Earwig, looking her up and down. "Green is a very dangerous colour. "What is your name, child?"
"Tiffany."
"Hmm," said Mrs. Earwig, not approving at all. "Well, you had better come in." She glanced up and made a ch sound.
"Oh, will you look at that? I bought that at the craft fair over in Slice, too. It was very expensive."
The curse net was hanging in tatters. "You didn't do that, did you?" Mrs. Earwig demanded.
"It's too high, Mrs. Earwig," said Tiffany.
"It's pronounced Arwidge," said Mrs. Earwig coldly.
"Sorry, Mrs. Earwig. Come."
It was a strange house. You couldn't doubt that a witch lived in it, and not just because every doorframe had a tall, pointy bit cut out of the top of it to allow Mrs. Earwig's hat to pass through. Miss Level had nothing on her walls except circus posters, but Mrs. Earwig had proper big paintings everywhere, and they were all witchy. There were lots of crescent moons and young women with quite frankly not enough clothes on, and big men with horns and, well, not just horns. There were suns and moon on the tiles of the floor, and the ceiling of the room Tiffany was led into was high, blue, and painted with stars. Mrs. Earwig, pronounced Arwidge, pointed to a chair with griffin feet and crescent-shaped cushions.
"Sit there," she said. "I will tell Anagramma that you are here. Do not kick the chair legs, please."
She went out via another door. Tiffany looked around. The Hiver looked around, and thought, "I've got to be the strongest. When I am strongest, I shall be safe. That one is weak. She thinks you can buy magic."
"Oh, it really is you," said a sharp voice behind her. "The cheese girl."
Tiffany stood up. The Hiver had been many things, including a number of wizards, because wizards sought power all the time and sometimes found, in their treacherous circles, not some demon that was so stupid that it could be tricked with threats and riddles, but the Hiver, which was so stupid that it could not be tricked at all. And the Hiver remembered. Anagramma was drinking a glass of milk. Once you'd seen Mrs. Earwig, you understood something about Anagramma. There was an air about her that she was taking notes on the world in order to draw up a list of suggestions for improvements.
"Hello," said Tiffany.
"I suppose you came along to beg to be allowed to join after all, have you? I suppose you might be fun."
"No, not really. But I might let you join me," said Tiffany. "Are you enjoying that milk?"
The glass of milk turned into a bunch of thistles and grass. Anagramma dropped it hurriedly. When it hit the floor, it became a glass of milk again, and shattered and splashed. Tiffany pointed at the ceiling. The painted stars flared, filling the room with light. But Anagramma stared at the spilled milk.
"You know they say the power comes," said Tiffany. "Well, it's come to me. Do you want to be my friend, or do you want to be in my way? I should clean up that milk if I was you."
She concentrated. She didn't know where this was coming from, but it seemed to know exactly what to do. Anagramma rose a few inches off the floor. She struggled and tried to run, but that only made her spin. To Tiffany's dreadful delight, the girl started to cry.
"You said we ought to use our power," said Tiffany, walking around her as Anagramma tried to break free. "You said if we had the gift, people ought to know about it. You're a girl with her head screwed on right."
Tiffany bent down a bit to look at her in the eye.
"Wouldn't it be awful if it got screwed on wrong?"
She waved a hand, and her prisoner dropped to the ground. But while Anagramma was unpleasant, she wasn't a coward, and she rose up with her mouth open to yell and a hand upraised.
"Careful," said Tiffany. "I can do it again."
Anagramma wasn't stupid either. She lowered her hand and shrugged.
"Well, you have been lucky," she said grudgingly.
"But I still need your help," said Tiffany.
"Why would you need my help?"
asked Anagramma sulkily.
"We need allies," the Hiver thought with Tiffany's mind. "They can help protect us. If necessary, we can sacrifice them. Other creatures will always want to be friends with the powerful, and this one loves power."
"To start with," said Tiffany, "where can I get a dress like yours?" Anagramma's eyes lit up.
"Oh, you want Zack Strong in the Arm, over in Sell It Without," she said. "He sells everything for the modern witch.
If necessary, we can sacrifice them. Other creatures will always want to be friends with the powerful, and this one loves power."
"To start with," said Tiffany, "where can I get a dress like yours?" Anna Grammer's eyes lit up. "Oh, you want Zack Strong in the Arm, over in Sell It Without," she said. "He sells everything for the modern witch."
"Then I want everything," said Tiffany.
"He'll want paying," Anna Grammer went on. "He's a dwarf. They know real gold from illusion gold. Everyone tries it out on him, of course. He just laughs. If you tried twice, he'll make a complaint to your mistress."
"Miss Tick said a witch should have just enough money," said Tiffany.
"That's right," said Anna Grammer. "Just enough to buy everything she wants. Mrs. Earwig says that just because we're witches, we don't have to live like peasants. But Miss Leverley's old-fashioned, isn't she? Probably hasn't got any money in the house."
And Tiffany said, "Oh, I know where I can get some money. I'll meet you. Please help me here this afternoon, and you can show me where his place is."
"What was that?" said Anna Grammer sharply.
"I just said I'd stop me.
Meet you here, this," Tiffany began.
"There it was again. There was a sort of odd echo in your voice," said Anna Grammer, "like two people trying to talk at once."
"Oh, that," said the hiver. "That's nothing. It'll stop soon."
It was an interesting mind, and the hiver enjoyed using it, but always there was that one place, that little place that was closed. It was annoying, like an itch that wouldn't go away. It did not think. The mind of the hiver was just what remained of all the other minds it had once lived in. They were like echoes after the music is taken away. But even echoes bouncing off one another can produce new harmonies. They clanged now. They rang out things like, "Fit in. Not strong enough yet to make enemies. Have friends."
Zack's low-ceilinged, dark shop had plenty to spend your money on. Zack was indeed a dwarf, and they are not traditionally interested in using magic, but he certainly knew how to display merchandise, which is what they are very good at. There were wands, mostly of metal, some of rare woods. Some had shiny crystals stuck on them, which of course made them more expensive. There were bottles of coloured glass in the potions section, and, oddly enough, the smaller the bottle, the more expensive it was.
"That's because there's often very rare ingredients, like tears of some rare snake or something," said Anna Grammer.
"I didn't know snakes cried," said Tiffany.
"Don't they? Oh, well, I expect that's why it's expensive."
There was plenty of other stuff. Shambles hung from the ceiling, much prettier and more interesting than the working ones that Tiffany had seen. Since they were made up complete, then surely they were dead, just like the ones Miss Level kept for ornamentation. But they looked good, and looking was important. There were even stones for looking into.
"Crystal balls," said Anna Grammer, as Tiffany picked one up. "Careful, they're very expensive."
She pointed to a sign which had been placed thoughtfully among the glittering globes. It said, "Lovely to look at, nice to hold. If you drop it, you get torn apart by wild horses." Tiffany held the biggest one in her hand and saw how Mr. Strong in the Arm moved slightly away from his counter, ready to rush forward with a bill if she dropped it. "Miss Tick uses a saucer of water with a bit of ink poured into it," she said, "and she usually borrows the water and catches the ink at that."
"Oh, a fundamentalist," said Anna Grammer. "Lettice, that's Mrs. Earwig, says they let us down terribly. Do we really want people to think witches are just a bunch of mad old women who look like crows? That's so gingerbread cottagey. We really ought to be professional about these things."
"Hmm," said Tiffany, throwing the crystal ball up into the air and catching it again with one hand.
"People should be made to fear witches." "Well, certainly they should respect us," said Anna Grammer. "I should be careful with that if I was you."
"Why?" said Tiffany, tossing the ball over her shoulder.
"That was finest quartz," shouted Zack, rushing around his counter.
"Oh, Tiffany," said Anna Grammer,
shocked and trying not to giggle.
Zack rushed past them to where the shattered ball lay in hundreds of very expensive fragments. Did not lie in very expensive fragments. Both he and Anna Grammer turned to Tiffany. She was spinning the crystal globe on the tip of her finger.
"Quickness of the hand deceives the eye," she said.
"But I heard it smash," said Zack.
"Deceives the ear, too," said Tiffany, putting the ball back on its stand. "I don't want this, but," and she pointed a finger,
I'll take that necklace, and that one, and the one with the cats, and that ring, and a set of those, and two, no, three of those, and what are these?
That's a book of night, said Anagramma nervously. It's a sort of magical diary. You write down what you've been working on.
Tiffany picked up the leather-bound book. It had an eye set in heavier leather on the cover. The eye rolled to look at her. This was a real witch's diary, and much more impressive than some shamefully cheap old book bought of a peddler.
"Whose eye was it?" said Tiffany. "Anyone interesting?"
I get the books from the wizards at Unseen University," said Zack, still shaken. "They're not real eyes, but they're clever enough to swivel around until they see another eye."
"It's just blinked," said Tiffany.
"Very clever people, wizards," said the dwarf, who knew a sail when he saw one. "Shall I wrap it up for you?"
"Yes," said Tiffany. "Wrap everything up. And now, can anyone hear me? Show me the clothes department, where there were hats. There are fashions in witchery, just like everything else. Some years the slightly concertinaed look is in, and you'll even see the point twisting around so much it's nearly pointing at the ground. There are varieties even in the most traditional hat, upright cone black, such as the countrywoman, inside pockets, waterproof, the cloudbuster, low drag coefficient for broomstick use, and, quite importantly, the safety, guaranteed to survive 80% of falling farmhouses. Tiffany chose the tallest upright cone. It was more than 2 feet high and had big stars sewn on it.
"Ah, the skyscraper! Very much your look," said Zack, bustling around and opening drawers. "It's for the witch on the way up, who knows what she wants and doesn't care how many frogs it takes. Ha ha ha. Incidentally, many ladies like a cloak with that. Now we have the midnight, pure wool, fine knit, very warm, but..." He gave Tiffany a knowing look. "We currently have very limited supplies of the zephyr billow, just in, very rare, black as coal and thin as a shadow. Completely useless for keeping you warm or dry, but it looks fabulous in even the slightest breeze. Observe!"
He held up the cloak and blew gently. It billowed out almost horizontally, flapping and twisting like a sheet in a gale.
"Oh, yes," breathed Anagramma.
"I'll take it," said Tiffany. "I shall wear it to the witch trials on Saturday." "Well, if you win, be sure to tell everyone you bought it here," said Zack.
"When I win, I shall tell them I got it at a considerable discount," said Tiffany.
"Oh, I don't do discounts," said Zack, as loftily as a dwarf can manage.
Tiffany stared at him, then picked up one of the most expensive wands from the display. It glittered.
"That's a number 6, whispered Anagramma. "Mrs. Earwig has one of those."
"I see it's got runes on it," said Tiffany, and something about the way she said it made Zack go pale.
"Well, of course," said Anagramma. "You've got to have runes."
"These are in Ogham," said Tiffany, smiling nastily at Zack.
"It's a very ancient language of the dwarfs. Shall I tell you what they say? They say, 'Oh, what a Wally is waving this.'"
"Don't you take that nasty lying tone with me, young lady," said the dwarf. "Who's your mistress? I know your type. Learn one spell and you think your mistress worth a wax. I'm not standing for this kind of behaviour. Brian!"
There was a rustling from the bead curtains that led to the back of the shop, and a wizard appeared. You could tell he was a wizard. Wizards never want you to have to guess. He had long, flowing robes with stars and magical symbols on them. There were even some sequins. His beard would have been long and flowing if indeed he'd been the kind of young man who could really grow a beard. Instead, it was ragged and wispy and not very clean, and the general effect was also spoiled by the fact that he was smoking a cigarette and had a mug of tea in his hand and a face that looked a bit like something that lives under damp logs. The mug was chipped, and on it there were the jolly words, "You don't have to be magic to work here, but it helps."
"Yeah?"
he asked, adding reproachfully, "I was on my tea break, you know."
"This young lady is being awkward," said Zack, "throwing magic about, talking back and being smart at me, the usual stuff."
Brian looked at Tiffany. She smiled.
"Brian's been to Unseen University," said Zack, with a so-there smirk. "Got a degree. What he doesn't know about magic could fill a book. These ladies need showing the way out, Brian."
"No, then, ladies," said Brian nervously, putting down his mug. "Do what Mr. Strong in the Arm says and push off, right?
We don't want trouble, do we? Go on, there's good kids.
Why do you need a wizard to protect you with all these magical amulets around the place, Mr. Strong in the Arm? Said Tiffany sweetly.
Zack turned to Brian.
What are you standing there for? He demanded. She's doing it again. I pay you, don't I? Put a fluence on him or something.
Well, now that one could be a bit of an awkward customer, Brian said, nodding toward Tiffany.
If you studied wizardry, Brian, then you know about conservation of mass, don't you? She said. I mean, you know what really happens when you try to turn someone into a frog.
Well, the wizard began. Ha! That's just a figure of speech, snapped Zack. I'd like to see you turn someone into a frog.
Wish granted, said Tiffany, and waved the wand.
Brian started to say, Look, when I said I'd been to Unseen University, I meant...
But he ended up saying, Ugh!
Take the eye away from Tiffany, up through the shop, high above the village, until the landscape spreads out in a patchwork of fields, woods, and mountains. The magic spreads out like the ripples made when a stone is dropped in water. Within a few miles of the place, it makes shambles spin and breaks the threads of curse nets. As the ripples widen, the magic gets fainter, although it never dies and still can be felt by things far more sensitive than any shamble. Let the eye move and fall now on this woods, this clearing, this cottage. There is nothing on the walls but whitewash, nothing on the floor but cold stone. The huge fireplace doesn't even have a cooking stove. A black tea kettle hangs on a black hook over what can hardly be called a fire at all. It's just a few little sticks huddling together. This is the house of a life peeled to the core. Upstairs, an old woman, all in faded black, is lying on a narrow bed. But you wouldn't think she was dead, because there is a big card on a string around her neck that reads, I ain't dead. And you have to believe it when it's written down like that. Her eyes are shut. Her hands are crossed on her chest. Her mouth is open. And bees crawl into her mouth and over her ears and all over her pillow. They fill the room, flying in and out of the open window where someone has put a row of saucers filled with sugary water on the sill. None of the saucers match, of course. A witch never has matching crockery. But the bees work on, coming and going, busy as bees. When the ripple of magic passes through, the buzz rises to a roar. Bees pour in through the window urgently, as though driven by a gale. They land on the still old woman until her head and shoulders are a boiling mass of tiny brown bodies. And then, as one insect, they rise in a storm and pour away into the outside air, which is full of whirling seeds from the sycamore trees outside. Mistress Weatherwax sat bolt upright and said, Bzzzt. Then she stuck a finger into her mouth, rootled around a bit, and pulled out a struggling bee. She blew on it and shooed it out of the window. For a moment, her eyes seemed to have many facets, just like a bee's.
So, she said, she's learned how to borrow, has she? Or she's been borrowed?
Anagramma fainted. Zack stared, too afraid to faint.
You see, said Tiffany, while something in the air went gloop, gloop above them. A frog weighs only a few ounces, but Brian weighs, about 120 pounds, yes? So, to turn someone big into a frog, you've got to find something to do with all the bits you can't fit into a frog. Right?
She bent down and lifted up the pointy wizard's hat on the floor.
Happy, Brian?
She asked. A small frog, squatting in a heap of clothes, looked up and said, Ack. Zack didn't look at the frog. He was looking at the thing that went gloop, gloop. It was like a large pink balloon full of water. Quite pretty, really, wobbling gently against the ceiling.
You've killed him, he mumbled.
What?
Oh, no. That's just the stuff he doesn't need right now. It's sort of spare Brian.
Ugh,
said Brian.
Gloop,
went the rest of him.
About this discount, Zack began hurriedly. 10% would be...
Tiffany waved the wand. Behind her, the whole display of crystals rose in the air and began to orbit one another in a glittering and above all fragile way.
That one shouldn't do that, he said.
Of course it can't. It's rubbish. But I can, said Tiffany. 90% discount, did I hear you say? Think quickly, I'm getting tired, and the spare brine is getting heavy.
You can keep it all, Zack screamed. For free, just don't let him splash, please.
No, no, I'd like you to stay in business, said Tiffany. A 90% discount would be fine. I'd like you to think of me as a friend.
Yes, yes, I am your friend. I'm a very friendly person. Now please put him back, please.
Zack dropped to his knees, which wasn't very far.
Please, he's not really a wizard. He just did evening classes there in fretwork. They hire out classrooms, that sort of thing. He thinks I don't know. But he read a few of the magic books on the quiet, and he pinched the robes, and he can talk wizard lingo, so she'd hardly know the difference. Please, I'd never get a real wizard for the money I pay him. Don't hurt him, please.
Tiffany waved a hand. There was a moment even more unpleasant than the one that had ended up with the spare brine bumping against the ceiling, and then the whole brine stood there blinking.
Thank you, thank you, thank you, gasped Zack.
Brian blinked.
What just happened? He asked.
Zack, beside himself with horror and relief, patted him frantically.
You're all there, he said. You're not a balloon.
Here, get off, said Brian, pushing him away.
There was a groan from Anagramma. She opened her eyes, saw Tiffany, and tried to scramble to her feet and back away, which meant that she went backward like a spider.
Please don't do that to me! Please don't! She shouted.
Tiffany ran after her and pulled her to her feet.
I wouldn't do anything to you, Anagramma, she said happily. You're my friend. We're all friends. Isn't that nice? Please, please, stop me!
You had to remember that Pixies weren't brownies. In theory, brownies would do the housework for you if you left them a saucer of milk. The Nacmac Fegal wouldn't. Oh, they'd try, if they liked you, and you didn't insult them with milk in the saucer. They were helpful. They just weren't good at it. For example, you shouldn't try to remove a stubborn stain from a plate by repeatedly hitting it with your head. And you didn't want to see a sink full of them and your best china, or a precious pot rolling backward and forward across the floor while the Fegals inside simultaneously fought the ground-in dirt and each other. But Miss Level, once she'd got the better china out of the way, found she rather liked the Fegals. There was something unsquashable about them, and they were entirely unamazed by a woman with two bodies, too.
"Ach, that's nothing," Rob Anybody had said. "When we was raiding for the Queen, we once found a world where there was people with five bodies each, all sizes you ken, for doing our kinds of jobs."
"Really?"
said both of Miss Level.
"Aye, and the biggest body had a huge left hand just for opening pickle jars."
"Those lids can get very tight, it's true," Miss Level had agreed.
"Oh, we saw some muckle eldritch places when we was raiding for the Queen," said Rob Anybody. "But we gave that up, for she was a scheming, greedy, ill-fed carlin, that she was."
"Aye, and it was no because she threw a suit to Fairyland for being completely pished at 2 in the afternoon, whatever any scunner might..."
said Daft Woolly.
"Pished?" said Miss Level. It means tired, aye, tired. That's what it means," said Rob Anybody, holding his hands firmly over his brother's mouth. "And you dinna ken how to talk in front of a lady, you shammering wee scunner."
Thank you for doing the dishes," said Miss Level. "You really didn't need to."
"Ach, it wasna any trouble," said Rob Anybody cheerfully, letting Daft Woolly go. "And I'm sure all them plates and stuff will mend fine wee a bit of glue."
Miss Level looked up at the clock with no hands.
"It's getting late," she said. "What exactly is it you propose to do, Mr. Anybody?"
"What?
Do you have a plan?"
"Oh, aye."
Rob Anybody rummaged around in his spog, which is a leather bag most Fegals have hanging from their belt. The contents are usually a mystery, but sometimes include interesting teeth. He flourished a much-folded piece of paper. Miss Level carefully unfolded it.
"PLN," she said.
"Aye," said Rob proudly. "We came prepared. Look, it's written down. PLNR. Plan."
How can I put this?" Miss Level mused. "Ah, yes. You came rushing all this way to save Tiffany from a creature that can't be seen, touched, smelled, or killed. What did you intend to do when you found it?
Rob Anybody scratched his head to a general shower of objects.
I think maybe you put your finger on the one weak spot, mistress, he admitted.
Do you mean you charge in regardless?
Oh, aye, that's the plan, sure enough,
said Rob Anybody, brightening up.
And then what happens?
Well, generally people are trying to wallop us by then, so we just make it up as we go along.
Yes, Robert, but the creature is inside her head.
Rob Anybody gave Billy a questioning look.
Robert is a high-hided way of saying Rob, said the Gonagall,
and to save time he said to Miss Level,
that means kind of posh.
Ach, we can get inside her head if we have to, said Rob.
I'd hoped to get there afore the thing got to her, but we can chase it.
Miss Level's face was a picture. Two pictures.
Inside her head, she said.
Oh, aye,
said Rob, as if that sort of thing happened every day.
No problemo. We can get in or out anywhere, except maybe pubs, which for some reason we had trouble leaving.
A head, is he?
Sorry, we're talking about a real head here, are we? Said Miss Level, horrified. What do you do, go in through the ears? Once again Rob stared at Billy, who looked puzzled.
No, mistress, they'd be too small,
he said patiently.
But we can move between worlds, you can. We are fairy folk.
Miss Level nodded both heads. It was true, but it was hard to look at the assembled ranks of the Nac Mac Feagle and remember that they were technically fairies. It was like watching penguins swimming underwater and having to remember that they were birds.
And, she said,
we can get into dreams, you see, and what's a mind but another world of dreaming?
No, I must forbid that, said Miss Level. I can't have you running around inside a young girl's head. I mean, look at you. You're fully grown, well, you're men. It'd be like you looking at her diary.
Rob Anybody looked puzzled.
Why? He said. We looked at her diary loads of times. Nae harm done.
You looked at her diary?
Said Miss Level, horrified.
Why?
Really, she thought later, she should have expected the answer.
"'Cause it was locked,' said Daft Woolly.
"'If she didn't want anyone to look at it, why'd she keep it at the back of her sock drawer? "'Anyway, all there was a load of words we couldn't understand "'and wee drawings of hearts and flowers and that.'
"'Hearts? Tiffany?' said Miss Level.
"'Really?'
She shook herself.
"'But you shouldn't have done that, and going into someone's mind is even worse.'
"'The hiver is in there, mistress,' said awfully wee Billy meekly.
But you said you can't do anything about it.
She might, if we can track her doon, said the Gonagall. If we can find the wee bitty bit of her that's still her. She's a bonny fighter when she's roused. You see, mistress, her mind's like a world itself. She'll be hiding in it somewhere, looking out through her own eyes, listening with her own ears, trying to make people hear, trying no to let yon beast find her. And it'll be hunting her all the time, trying to break her doon.
Miss Level began to look hunted herself. 50 small faces, full of worry and hope and broken noses, looked up at her. And she knew she didn't have a better plan, or even a PLN.
All right, she said, but at least you ought to have a bath. I know that's silly, but it will make me feel better about the whole thing.
There was a general groan.
A bath! But we all had one new a year ago, said Rob Anybody. How about the big Dupont for the ships?
"'Ach, Crivens,' said Big Jan,
"'you cannot ask a man to take a bath again this soon, mistress. "'There'll be nothing left to us.'
"'With hot water and soap,' said Miss Level. "'I mean it. "'I'll run the water, and I'll put some rope over the edge "'so you can climb in and out, but you will get clean. "'I'm a hag, and you'd better do what I say.'
"'Oh, all right,' said Rob. "'We'll do it for the big wee hag, but you're no to peak, okay?'
Peek, said Miss Level.
She pointed a trembling finger. Get into that bathroom now. Miss Level did, however, listen at the door. It's the sort of thing a witch does. There was nothing to hear at first but a gentle splash of water, and then,
this is no as bad as I thought.
Aye, very pleasing.
Hey, there's a big yellow duck here. Who are you pointing at? Beak at, you scunner?
There was a wet quack and some bubbling noises as the rubber duck sank.
"'Rob, we ought to get one of these put in back at the mound, "'very warming in the winter time.
"Aye, it's no that good for the sheep having to drink out of that pond after we've been bathing. It's terrible hearing a sheep try to spit." "Ach, it'll make us softies. It's nae a good wash if you dinna ha' the ice forming on your heed." "Who are you calling a softie?"
There followed a lot more splashing, and water started to seep under the door. Miss Level knocked.
"Come on out now and dry yourselves off," she commanded. "She could be back at any minute."
In fact, it wasn't for another 2 hours, by which time Miss Level had got so nervous that her necklaces jingled all the time. She'd come to witching later than most, being naturally qualified by reason of the two bodies, but she'd never been very happy about magic. In truth, most witches could get through their whole lives without having to do serious, undeniable magic. Making shambles and curse nets and dream catchers didn't really count, being rather more like arts and crafts. And most of the rest of it was practical medicine, common sense, and the ability to look stern in a pointy hat. But being a witch and wearing the big black hat was like being a policeman. People saw the uniform, not you. When the Mad Axeman was running down the street, you weren't allowed to back away muttering, "Could you find someone else? Actually, I mostly just do, you know, stray dogs and road safety." You were there, you had the hat, you did the job. That was the basic rule of witchery. It's up to you. She was two bags of nerves when Tiffany arrived back and stood side by side holding hands with herself to give herself confidence.
"Where have you been, dear?"
"Out," said Tiffany.
"And what have you been doing?"
"Nothing."
"I see you've been shopping."
"Yes."
"Who with?"
"Nobody."
"Ah, yes," Miss Level trilled, completely adrift. "I remember when I used to go out and do nothing. Sometimes you can be your own worst company. Believe me, I know."
But Tiffany had already swept upstairs. Without anyone actually seeming to move, feagles started to appear everywhere in the room.
"Well, that could have gone better," said Rob Anybody.
"She looked so different," Miss Level burst out. "She moved differently. I just didn't know what to do. And those clothes!"
"Aye, sparkling like a young raven," said Rob.
"Did you see all those bags? Where could she have got the money? I certainly don't have that kind of—"
She stopped, and both of Miss Level spoke.
"Oh, no. Surely not. She wouldn't have, would she?" "I dinna ken what you're talking about," said Awfully Wee Billy. "But what she would dee is another point. That's the hiver doing the thinking."
Miss Level clasped all four hands together in distress.
"Oh, dear, I must go down to the village and check."
One of her ran toward the door.
"Well, at least she's brought the broomstick back," muttered the Miss Level who stayed.
She started to wear the slightly unfocused expression she got when both her bodies weren't in the same place. They could hear noises from upstairs.
"I vote we just tap her gently on the head," said Big Yan. "It canna give us any trouble if it's gone sleepy, is I?"
Miss Level clenched and unclenched her fists nervously.
"No," she said, "I'll go up there and have a serious talk with her." "I told yous, mistress, it's not her," said Awfully Wee Billy wearily. "Well, at least I'll wait until I've visited Mr. Weevil," said Miss Level, standing in her kitchen. "I'm nearly there. He's asleep. I'll just ease the box out quietly. If she's taken his money, I'm going to be so angry."
It was a good hat, Tiffany thought. It was at least as tall as Mrs. Earwig's hat, and it shone darkly. The stars gleamed. The other packages covered the floor and the bed. She pulled out another one of the black dresses, the one covered in lace, and the cloak which spread out in the air. She really liked the cloak. In anything but a complete dead calm, it floated and billowed as if whipped by a gale. If you were going to be a witch, you had to start by looking like one. She twirled in it once or twice, and then said something without thinking, so that the hiver part of her was caught unawares.
"See me."
The hiver was suddenly thrust outside her body. Tiffany was free. She hadn't expected it. She felt herself to the tips of her fingers. She dived toward the bed, grabbed one of Zack's best wands, and waved it desperately in front of her like a weapon.
"You stay out," she said. "Stay away. It's my body, not yours. You've made it do dreadful things. You stole Mr. Weevil's money. Look at these stupid clothes. And don't you know about eating and drinking? You stay away. You're not coming back. Don't you dare. I've got power, you know."
"So have we,"
said her own voice in her own head.
"Yours."
They fought.
A watcher would have seen only a girl in a black dress, spinning around the room and flailing her arms as if she'd been stung, but Tiffany fought for every toe, every finger. She bounced off a wall, banged against the chest of drawers, slammed into another wall, and the door was flung open. One of Miss Level was there, no longer nervous, but trembling with rage. She pointed a shaking finger. "Listen to me, whoever you are! Did you steal, Mr.?" she began. The Hiver turned. The Hiver struck. The Hiver killed.